Welcome back to Raw and Ballsy Exposed. My name is Mitchell and this is part 5 in the multi-part series. On the right of your speaker, we have the founder of Inspire Success Academy of Life and the author of the book we are dissecting in this podcast, Mr. John Briggs. So how are you today, John?
Oh, just fantastic, Mitch. Thank you very much.
Last week, we covered two new chapters in the book, which was chapter 6 and 7, negative attracts negative, positive attracts positive, as well as creating a winning mentality. So we're going to kick off today's chat with the next chapter, chapter 8, which is motivation. So what's that all about? What's the motivation chapter about, John?
Okie dokie. Well, it's all linked in, as previously mentioned. We've discussed goal setting before and deadlines and everything else. But you've got to have some kind of motivation in order to achieve your designated success. Because you've got to work out what is pushing you towards your goal. You know, you've got to think to yourself, well, why do I need to achieve this? What does it mean to me to achieve this? What will it mean if I don't? So feelings and emotions need to be attached to motivation. Motivation isn't just standing there shouting at somebody and hoping that they do what you tell them to do. In fact, that is probably like 1%.
Like the old style football coaches that did that before they got in trouble for doing that.
Yes, exactly. Because what you've got to try to do, if you're motivating somebody else or indeed yourself, you've got to work out what makes that person tick or what makes you tick. So, you know, for some people, it might be just winning makes you feel really good. So the word feel is an emotional word. It's a feeling. So that is what you need to attach to the motivation, the feeling, the good feeling or a bad feeling. The bad feeling might be for not achieving what you want. And therefore, you've got to really be in that role, that part. What does it feel like, you know, to not achieve what you wanted to achieve or to achieve what you wanted to achieve? As a personal trainer, I do this with my clients all the time. This is linked in with visualization as well. You know, I say to them, what will it feel like when you cross the 10K race on marathon day or 21K or 42K or whatever it might be? All those thousands of people cheering, what will it feel like? So all the work that they've put in will also be recognized by themselves then at that point as really worth it. And it feels great because you know you've worked hard to achieve this goal. And the motivation comes from all of that. The great feelings of succeeding. But everybody's different. And you've got to find your motive. You know, so for some people, motivation is linked to incentives. You know, if you do this, then you'll get this. Whatever it might be, you know.
Yeah.
If you study really hard at school and pass your exams, then you might get, I don't know, $50. You might get a car. I don't know, whatever. So you work towards the incentive. If it's to lose 2 dress sizes for your wedding, you're not married yet, are you, Mitch?
No,
not yet. You don't need to lose a dress size, do you?
Probably 2.
I haven't seen you in a dress before. So some ladies, we can't say really say, but men, who knows, might want to lose a couple of dress sizes for the wedding. There's the incentive. They want to look the best they've ever looked. That's the motivation.
And I suppose that sort of ties it back in with chapter 5, visualization, because you're visualizing the thing that is going to be motivating you.
Absolutely.
To achieve your goal.
And then you attach feelings to it. So how are you going to feel on that most important day of your life? On that wedding, fitting in the wedding dress or the suit, whatever it might be, all the photographs, you've got to do it. You've got no choice. So with motivation, I think you need to give yourself a no choice mentality. Most people don't. I was talking to an ex-client of mine last week who's actually going to write a foreword in the book. His name's Greg. And Greg was this unbelievable client to train. I couldn't break him. He was just a superman. And he achieved some incredible things. At his age, he started to enter some cycling events on the Gold Coast to start with, which he won hands down. You know, he was in his 40s. He then started entering state events and then nationals. And he eventually placed second in the nationals. And he was quite incredible. He was just a superman. The guy was super fit. A few years later, he moved away. He moved to Bribie Island. And he phoned me up and said, John, I've got to go to the hospital. I said, what's up? He goes, well, my brother phoned me a couple of days ago and said to get a cholesterol check because his brother was told he needed a triple bypass. So his brother phoned him up and said, Greg, get yourself a cholesterol check. Greg replied with, I'm fit. I don't need to do that. I'm fine. He goes, well, look, I've been told I'm going to have a triple bypass. Dad died of a heart attack. Get yourself checked out. This could be hereditary. So he did. And the test results came back. And the doctor said, I can't believe you're alive. Yep. We need to operate. Now. So the next day he was operated on, quadruple bypass. There were blockages everywhere.
Yeah.
That's when they take your heart out and leave it on your chest and all the rest of it and then unblock all of the arteries that are blocked. Yep. And they had to have something called a stent put in and wires in, which he's still got there now, to keep the arteries open. And yes, he's made an amazing comeback. But when I was speaking to him last week, I said, so I sort of half interview. I said, so what gave you the drive? He said, well, I had no choice. I had no choice, otherwise I'm going to die. So it reflects what I say. You give yourself no choice.
Yeah.
And then you will succeed. I have a saying that says there's no stop signs, no giveaways, no U-turns, and no roundabout on my road.
Yeah.
And I think if everybody thought that, okay, we can't all be super driven for everything all of the time, but you can make a mini version for yourself and just say, well, okay, I'm not going to stop when the going gets tough. I might have a little rest, get up, and try again. But what's your motivation? In Greg's case, it was to live. And that's pretty damn good motivation. If it's to start a business, well, don't say to yourself, well, if it fails, I can go back to my other job. Take away the safety net. You know, visualize a trapeze artist with a safety net. They're probably thinking, well, if I fall, the safety net stops me from hurting myself. Well, take it away. You'll probably become a better trapeze artist. With practice, of course, obviously. I'm not saying everybody should get up and walk the high wire.
Yeah.
But they would have to be better because they'd have no choice. And this is what a lot of people don't do. They don't give themselves a no choice. They give themselves an out before they've even started. I understand we're not all wired the same way. So therefore, you start small if you're not a massive risk taker. So this all links in with risk taking as well. But you've got to back yourself.
Yeah, I suppose it's like with the trapeze artists, when they're starting to fall, they're wobbling. Instead of trying to regain their balance, they just fall into that safety net because they know it's there.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
But the very, very best in the world, you practice as hard as you possibly can to become the best.
Yeah.
That way you don't need a safety net. But you've got to have, what's your motivation? Well, if their motivation is to be the best in the world, because the reward, because motivation is linked to reward. Right. Yeah. So let's take, I don't know, Lewis Hamilton, Formula One motor racing driver. Is that high risk?
Definitely.
It's really high risk. How fast are they going?
300
kilometers an hour? Yeah. Unbelievable.
Thereabouts.
Yeah. And they can't really sort of go, oh, I might just slow down here. They need to win. Why? Because the reward is massive. Financial reward in their case. Also, it feels good. It feels good to participate. At those speeds, I imagine. I've never done it, and I probably won't, but I can imagine what it might feel like to a point. High speed is thrilling, so it's a thrill to be involved, and they practice like crazy, but the rewards are incredible. So you work really hard, and people forget this, that to be really successful in everything you do, you have to work incredibly hard. Most people don't realize that. And most people don't want to work really hard because they can get something average and be satisfied with it. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But this isn't what this is about. This is about if you want to be better, if you want to better yourself, if you want to keep motivating yourself to improve in every single thing you do, then you have to start attaching some motivation, some goals, some deadlines, and some urgency, and keep wanting to try to get better in everything you do all of the time.
I suppose it's just about finding out what your reward is, what drives you to want to do it.
And that word drive is incredibly important because, well, it is, you know, because, no pun intended for Lewis Hamilton there, by the way, but what's your drive? You know, for myself, for example, in when I did the boxing match, my drive was a different reason. I did it as a representative of something which I couldn't fail at. I just couldn't. I gave myself no choice. because I did it for my dad, who passed away through complications from Alzheimer's.
Yeah.
And he faced a lot of adversity, and he came through it every single time, apart from right at the very end with Alzheimer's. But he fought it, and he fought it, and he fought it, and he fought it. He also had a heart attack, and he fought that and beat it.
Yep.
He also had prostate cancer, and he fought that and beat that. Okay, in the end, 82 or whatever it was, Alzheimer's got him, and he couldn't do anything about it. But he kept fighting it, and that's what I wanted to represent. So what was my drive? To put across a message. That was what my drive was. It was also to show other people what you can do if you work really hard. And, you know, I trained four times a day at really, really high intensity. And not just on fitness, but practicing things. Boxing, I've done it a little bit, tiny bit, years and years and years ago. But, you know, you're looking at when I was 13.
Yeah.
I was 51. And my opponent was 34, 17 years younger than me, 6'4", weighed 8 kilos heavier than me, much longer reach, and much younger. You know, so, and I had to train really hard. So I didn't leave anything uncrossed, no stone unturned. I did the whole lot, I was obsessed with it, because I gave myself no choice. Yes, it wasn't totally guaranteed that I was going to win, but I was going to leave everything in that boxing ring.
Yeah.
You'd have had to kill me to beat me. Yeah. 10 times at least. And then I probably would have got up. So so my motivation there, to send the message across to everybody that you can do anything at any age.
Yeah.
And I really desperately wanted to do it. So I attached a lot of, not desperateness, but the drive was bigger than my own personal goal. My personal, winning a boxing match wasn't it.
Yeah.
It was very much a message I wanted to put across. So that's different. I mean, that was mine. In business, well, I had no choice. I gave myself a no choice. I packed in my full-time job. If I didn't succeed, I wasn't going to get paid. So therefore, I had to. We just had a baby, for God's sake. You know, no choice in the mortgage and a baby. Crikey, you've got to work really hard. You just can't stop. But most people don't have the passion in what they're trying to achieve. They just go, I'll go for a safer alternative. And they wonder why they're not satisfied in life. They're always searching for something. Well, they can change that. They can make a choice. Everything we do, everything we are, is the sum of our decisions. Everything.
Yeah.
Unless it's something, you know, which we can't help. Going back to my boxing match, the other reason why I did it was to send a message to certain members of my family who were not very pleasant to my dad. And I wanted to represent my father to beat them. That was massive. That was a huge force attached to every single thing I did for 6 months of training four times a day. And there was no way, the unfortunate opponent, it's not his fault, but he got in the way of this.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's a lovely guy and he's now a client of mine. He's a good friend as well. So that's, you know, irrelevant. But yeah, you have a bigger reason to achieve. And that way, like for example, with personal training, I don't think I'm going to train this client to get fit. I believe that in my mind, the more I put across the message for health and fitness, the more I'm going to help the whole world get fitter.
Yeah.
In my mind. Whether it comes across that way or not, whether it actually is that way or not, is not. It doesn't matter. What matters is my motivation is to get the whole world a fitter, healthier place.
I suppose that's the key to the motivation, finding out what your motivation
is.
Yeah,
it is. And that's different for everybody, you know. And if it's helping other people, fantastic. If it's, you know, going down to the soup kitchens and being a volunteer to help them, that's a great motivation. What a wonderful thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, we mentioned Walt Disney earlier. What was his motivation? To make the world a happier place, probably. Yeah. It links in with, funny enough, the next chapter, childlike spontaneity. So what I mean by this is that when we're kids, you know, from the age of whatever, as soon as we're born, or as soon as we're able to cognitively respond,
yeah,
and walk and talk and all the rest of it, we're encouraged by our elders, parents usually, brothers and sisters, maybe other teachers, whatever,
yeah,
to do well. In the first thing of doing well, it's crawling.
Yeah.
Yeah? Crawling. Yeah, look, it's crawling, you're doing so well. Then it's walking.
Yeah.
So the baby gets up and walks and, you know, does 3 steps. And probably falls over. Wobbly, yeah? Does the parent say to the baby, you stupid fat baby, you've fallen over, you're useless, you've failed again?
No, generally they won't.
They won't. They'll encourage them, and they'll keep encouraging them through their life until they're about 7 or 8. Now, when you're at school, when you're 5, you know, the whole world is like the wonderful world of Walt Disney.
Yeah.
Everything is possible, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, superheroes and exist, and your favorite sports person is somebody that you look up to and you aspire to be.
Yeah.
And everything is possible. And we're encouraged to think that way as a kid.
Yeah.
You know, my hero was Muhammad Ali, still is. And I wanted to be just like him. And I was encouraged to be like him as a kid. When I got a bit older, I vaguely remember, as a maybe around 8-year-old, my parents sort of suggesting that I probably shouldn't want to be a boxer. Yep. I did want to be a boxer because you get your head beaten up and you get cauliflower ears and all this kind of stuff. And I sort of remember it sort of not shattering my dreams, because I kept thinking, no, I'm going to do this. But, you know, just the tiniest bit of negativity came into what I wanted to do. You know, my aspiration was to be like Muhammad Ali and be world champion. I mean, I was only 6, but or 8 or whatever it was, but that's what I wanted to do. And such is a child's brain. We're all encouraged to shoot for the stars when we're little. And, you know, at school you might have to write something on what do you want to do when you grow up. I remember doing this. And we're encouraged, you know, it could be a fireman, it could be an astronaut or whatever it might be. A nurse, you name it. No one says then, oh no, what a stupid idea, do they?
No.
They don't discourage you like the baby falling over. They encourage you. Now, something happens around about the age of 8 or 9. And I'm not sure exactly what it is, but I'm guessing it's on the lines of when the kids start saying things still like, I want to be an astronaut, the parent or the teacher might, they don't say, no, don't want a stupid idea. They might just say, yeah, look, you know, you might want to start thinking about something else or something like that. So it immediately takes away their aspiration and they start trying to role model on something else, which is in their head now a little bit more achievable. So they might want to become a milkman. Or
something a little bit more within the box.
Normal. Yes, exactly. However, what makes an astronaut?
Them dreaming about being an astronaut and following it through.
Drive. Link back to your motivation. They never lost sight of that aspiration.
Yeah.
What makes a number one tennis player in the world? Or number one businessman in the world? Or the best teacher in the world? What makes these people the best?
It's all the same again. It's just their drive and their want to do it and they're not having their dreams crushed like a lot of people will.
Exactly right. So, in my opinion, when you're a kid, you've got so much spontaneity. We're really, really creative. Because, like Walt Disney, your brain is just one big cartoon of fun. And we invent things, we create things, we just do things in the moment, in the now, on the spur of the moment. We do not overthink, we just do.
Yeah.
That is bashed out of us, in my opinion, by schools and probably parents as well. They don't really mean to do anything wrong. They've got the best interests at heart for the kid because they were trained in the same way too in their life and so on. And their parents were, and their parents were. You have to conform to society. Why is it that some people do not conform? They just do what they want to do. They make their own road. They bulldoze their own path. They say, sod you, I'm doing this no matter what. They just keep going with that childlike spontaneity. They trust their gut feeling on something. They don't second guess it. There's no inner voice saying, what if it fails? Because they have fun. Kids have fun. And they do. Yep. They just do. They make. They create. They invent. They're in the spur of the moment. Everything they do is in the now. And they live in a wonderful world. I'm not saying that everything as an adult should be all through rose-colored spectacles and fun and parties. What I'm saying is that if you at least act like or be childlike, not childish, childlike, it sparks off those creative parts of your brain. They make you invent things and do things. And especially, for example, if it's a business, marketing ideas come from this sort of thing. And just doing it, Richard Branson was brilliant at this. He would just come out with an idea and do it. He didn't second guess himself. He didn't say, what if it fails? Because he looks everything like a game. And so do I. Everything's to me is like a game. It's like a game of tennis, a game of cricket. Business is a game to me.
Yeah.
Life is fun. Life's a game. And you attach your fun and your childlike spontaneity and just do it now. Don't say, what if it fails? Just do it. Because who's the judge? Who is the panel of judges that says that's crap or that's good? So this is when I've included in the book something about self one and self two, which I may have mentioned before, I can't remember. And I actually have pinched this idea from a brilliant book that I've got called The Inner Game of Tennis, written by a guy called Galway.
Yep.
And he talks about self two, who has a go at self one every time you play a bad shot. Self two actually doesn't exist. It's something that we've created in our brain. So self two is your inner judge. Now, the key is to be in the now. When you're just in the now, there is no self one or self two. There's just self. And you just do as a result, because you don't care if it works or doesn't work. Because there is no work or doesn't work. There is no success or failure. There just is. And if you use the tennis analogy for a second, the lines on the court and the net, yes, they make the rules of the game. If you hit it outside the lines or hit it into the net, you lose a point.
Yeah.
But does it mean it's a bad shot if you look at the shot?
No, not necessarily.
It's only the rules of the game.
Yeah.
You apply that back to life. If you do something and it doesn't work, does it mean it was bad?
No, it just means that generally there could be a better way to do it.
Absolutely.
You might just have to slightly adjust it in some way.
Exactly right. And that's what I'm saying, that as adults, we have been made into robots.
Yeah.
We've been channeled into something. You know, at 16, 15, you're told to pick your subjects. At 14, whatever, pick your subjects because it will relate to a career.
Yeah.
Well, who's telling you that? At 14, you know, take away your dreams, take away your aspirations. They're telling you to do this because that's what the world wants. People are scared of high flyers and risk takers because it means you can't control them. But you know what? We need them, because if we didn't have them, there'd be no Walt Disney's, there'd be no super musicians, because every single musician is really creative. They're an artist, aren't they?
Yeah.
Every single great painter, obviously, is an artist. Every single architect.
Yeah.
So if they're told to not be like that and not chase their dreams, then what would we have?
A very dull world.
We would have a very damn dull world, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So not enough people trust their gut instinct and be childlike. The first thing that comes in, if you open up that part of your brain, quite often the first thing that comes into your head is a good thing. All you have to do is follow it up straight away. Don't tell yourself it's a bad idea. There's no such thing as a bad idea. It's just an idea.
Relating to that, I suppose, I was only just having a conversation earlier today with a friend who lives down in Melbourne. Her child has just recently, well, the last few years, been getting more and more serious. He's still quite young, 11 or 12, something like that, but he's got an aspiration to play for my football club, Carlton. So
Fantastic.
I'm right behind it, hoping that he does make it. But then to look at her encouragement and how she's still encouraging me in that way then sort of made me click a few boxes and realize, well, hang on, her and her partner are both very out of the box type people, because he's a musician and she's opened her third business of late. So that obviously says that has then got a flow on effect to the next generation, and then they can then pass on that out of the box thinking and allowing people to live to their hopes and dreams rather than being programmed to the way society says.
You've got it, and they probably will.
Yep.
Already, I would suggest that how old is it? What's his name?
Cash.
How old is he?
12.
12.
Yeah.
I would suggest he's been already programmed to be out of the box from the day he was born.
Yeah.
Because that's coming from his parents.
Yeah.
You see? So, and it's interesting, isn't it? The out of the box. Where does that expression come from? What does it mean? Well, it means that if you're in the box, you're programmed. You're shoved in there, someone's put a lid on you. And I've often said, take the lid off, jump out of it, be creative, show freedom of expression, be childlike, be spontaneous, don't second guess it, and don't listen to what other people say or listen to what inner voice you've got in your head that says, oh, that might be a silly idea, or don't do that, that's stupid, or whatever. Who cares?
Absolutely.
Who cares what other people think?
I suppose the most full-on way of putting being in a box is being in prison, because you're confined to those... four walls, which is
absolutely
so to do that in real life when there is no four walls, they're just imaginary four walls that people are telling you exist.
Exactly. Well, you're a musician, Mitch, as well, but think about the real expressive artists, you know, people like David Bowie.
Yeah.
I mean, he was groundbreaking. Yes, he looked a bit weird at the time when he was wearing makeup and all the rest of it, and other people weren't. He was probably the first or one of the first to do that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did he care?
No.
He didn't give a damn. Is he super creative? Yes.
Yeah.
Was he a genius? Yes. He was brilliant.
Yeah.
But if he listened to what everybody said, then there would be no David Bowie. He'd be David Jones.
Yeah.
That's what his name originally was. Yeah.
Similar sort of out-of-the-box type personality with a lot of musicians because they're quite creative. Yeah. Well, a lot of artists in general, I suppose. Look at Freddie Mercury, Elton John.
That's right. They don't care.
Yeah.
They've just got a lot of freedom of expression and they're in the moment. And when they're on stage, they're more in the moment. They just do. You know, they don't care.
Yeah.
They're just there to perform. And I see, you know, we should be all like that.
Yeah.
But we're not because we conform, not perform.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we've been told to. And it's only a few people that break out of that. And then you go through your whole life wishing you had. Well, it's always time.
So to sum up this chapter, is any tips that you give to people to keep that childlike spontaneity?
Spontaneity. It's close enough.
Spontaneity.
Yeah, of course. So first of all, how to be in the now. Well, just break that down a second. So if you've done something that, in inverted commas, hasn't worked.
Yeah.
First of all, it's in the past. It's gone.
Yeah.
You can't change it. It's gone. Whatever you did then has disappeared. It doesn't exist. If you are worried about something that may happen in the future, that creates worry, anxiety, pressure, bad pressure, which then makes you go, oh, okay, I probably won't do it because what if it doesn't work? I'm going to look like a goose. I'm going to fail. I'm a failure. Oh, no, I'm not even going to bother trying. So what do? Well, you don't think about that either. So you bring it back to the now. Yes, you can plan for the future, but you don't overthink that. If you overthink it, you can think yourself out of it. So you bring it back into the now. You bring it back into the present. That is the only thing that we can control right now is the now. How do you do that even better? Breathing exercises. I do this a lot. Breathe in for 5 seconds and breathe out for 8. And it slows everything down. And it's weird. It sort of opens up part of your brain into this creative world, you know, where it's, in a way, it's like meditation. With my first business, personal training business, Lean Mums, Trim Tums, and Beer Belly Busters Personal Training. I wasn't trying to think about that name when it popped into my head. I was lying on a lilo in a pool. I was actually being lazy.
Yeah.
I didn't say to myself, oh, I'm going to go on the lilo to think of a business idea. Yeah. It just came into my head. And I remember running up the stairs, you know, trying to find a pen, looking for a towel, soaking wet. Otherwise, I've never remembered the name.
Yeah.
Because I just remember thinking, wow, what a name. That's great. Now, the reason why I probably accessed that part of my brain to get to that business name is I was in a really relaxed state of mind. Yeah. I wouldn't know it at the time. It was just luck in that respect. That then I thought, well, hang on. When you're really relaxed, are you in the future? No, it's the opposite. You're in the now.
Yeah.
Can't be in the past, that doesn't exist.
Yeah.
So you're right in the now, total deep relaxation, because you can't be anxious about the now. It's impossible, which then opens up your brain because it's not moving too fast.
Yeah.
It's nice and slow. So you slow everything down. So you do that with breathing exercises and then visualization.
Yeah.
How do you want whatever you're doing to pan out? Visualize a well-formed outcome. See it in high-definition color. See it like a movie, whatever it is. And you do that with breathing exercises as well.
Yeah.
And everything slows down and you feel in control. And it does. I mean, even things like long distance running. When I do that and I'm forgetting how far I've gone.
Yeah.
I'm in a pattern. And I've got this mantra in my head that nothing will beat me, nothing will stop me. But it's a rhythm.
Yeah.
It's like music.
Yeah.
So it's like a, what do you call it? Metronome.
Yeah.
And then for some weird reason, I get all these ideas.
Yeah.
And it's because I'm relaxed. So relaxation is the opposite of anxious. So what do? Easy. Make yourself relaxed and let the ideas flood into your head. In fact, there is a scientific reason for this, and I think they call it an alpha state. I'll check and make sure I'm right. But when your brain goes into an alpha state, this is when you're in this deep relaxation mode and the creative part of your brain starts working really fast and really well. But then you have to trust it and use it. Okay, and this then relates to self one and self two. And then you're just being childlike, spontaneity, in the now, in the moment, and just do.
I just did a quick Google search and it does say alpha state is characterized by being clear-headed, present, and fully in the moment.
How about that, eh? Hey!
Alpha waves create a sense of peace and well-being in your mind and body. When people are in this state, they seem to exclude charisma as their mind focuses only on the here and now.
No way. Is that what it says?
Exactly what it says.
That's incredible. So I had no idea that's what the definition was.
Yeah.
In fact, I even forgot about it because it's quite late in the podcast about the alpha state. But that's obviously by accident I reached that.
Yeah.
Since then, of course, I use it. I go back into it. I don't always have to lie on a lilo.
Yeah.
It could be a hammock. It could be the bed. As long as you're in silence and you're focusing on your breathing, it brings you, as that definition there in the Google search you've just done, says that you bring it back into the present, and that's all you need to worry about. Not worry about. So you need to focus on, and you do it with just deep relaxation, deep breathing, and it's amazing what it does.
So is there any, obviously you could, again, you could probably go on all day about the topic, but is there anything else specific?
Just no, just have fun. That's the other thing. Kids have fun. Adults decide to not have fun.
Yeah.
Just quickly, I remember at school, I was about 17 or 18, and there was a, this is an example. I've never grown up, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm quite proud of that fact. And there was a prefect called Jenny, and she was picking a book up off the floor, and I had an elastic band in my hand, and her rear was facing me, so I flicked this elastic band on the bottom, and she turned around and said to me, "John Briggs, won't you ever grow up?" And I remember thinking, no.
Yeah.
No, I won't. I'm not going to.
Yeah.
And I've maintained the same principle ever since.
Yeah. And that's probably one of the keys to why you are successful with business and life.
I have fun. I enjoy it. I don't feel like it's hard work, because it feels like I'm playing a game of tennis. It feels like a game. One other thing, pressure.
Yeah.
Some people feel like pressure is a downward force on their shoulders, pushing them into the ground. It's hard, it's horrible, it feels uncomfortable. I see pressure as a great big fireball right at my backside, propelling me forwards, because I want to be forwards. I want to be going forwards. I don't want to be stuck. I want to achieve things, because I know how it feels good to achieve things. I want to win my tennis matches. I want to do well in business. I want to be a good parent. I want to be a good husband. I want to do all these things really well.
Yeah.
So the visualization of the fireball right at my backside doesn't quite touch my cheeks, mind you. But, you know, as I'm just, because I'm moving forwards fast.
Yeah.
But with clarity, and I know where I'm going. You've got to know where you're going. So if you just act in the moment, you're not going to go, oh, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
You just do and have fun. Have fun.
Yeah, I suppose that's the key. Have fun.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, yeah, well, thanks for coming on in, John. It's been a pleasure again.
You're welcome.
And, yeah, I hope you have a lovely week. And
sorry, just having some fun.
And until next grow up, John.
No, never.
Good answer. Till next time, John. Have a great week.
Cheers, Mitch. Speak to you soon.